how do we understand that there is life after death also? Without that understanding, death becomes very crushing. But yet, you know, do we just put faith that there is that life continues after death? See, first thing is to recognize that you may say, how can I believe in life after death? We can turn that question and ask, how can you believe in life before death? What do I mean by that is, no, what is the source of life right now? Right now, my body is essentially made of the same chemicals as is this, ultimately, it's not same chemicals, but same atoms and molecules, you know, the founding elements of this. Now, atoms and molecules are not conscious. And just some combination of atoms and molecules doesn't become conscious. So where consciousness comes from is a mystery even now. In fact, Science magazine said that is the source of consciousness is one of the top unsolved mysteries. They say, where did the universe come from? That is the number one unsolved mystery in science. Number two, they say, is where does consciousness come from? So consciousness is radically different from the body, the material body that makes it. So when we look at the world, we basically start with two choices. One is that matter is all that exists, or there is something higher apart from matter. Now, if matter is all that exists, then everything is ultimately meaningless. Because even the sense of meaning, what is meaning? Meaning is simply we are nothing but our biochemicals, our neurochemicals, and our emotions, our insights, they are nothing but some electrochemical patterns in the chemicals in our brain. So, actually, meaning and the search for meaning both become meaningless in a purely materialistic worldview. This may be a little abstract to understand, but the point I'm making is that at a materialistic level, there is no understanding of understanding. There is no understanding of understanding. Now, who is it that understands? What is that is all that is happening? Say, right now I'm speaking and you are hearing. So, if there is nothing beyond matter to my and your existence, then all that is happening is just some chemicals are being circulated in my brain and some chemicals are being circulated in your brain. Why should what I am saying make sense to me or it makes sense to you? What is sense anyway? See, everything becomes meaningless. In a materialistic framework, not only death is meaningless, life itself is meaningless. Now, some skeptics may say, yes, life is meaningless. And be courageous, accept that. Don't imagine that something continues to exist after death and try to find some meaning. Accept that everything is meaningless. Okay, if we accept for argument's sake that everything is meaningless. Now, one of the very common criticisms that atheistic people offer to religion and to God is that your religious beliefs don't make sense. This doesn't make sense, that doesn't make sense, that doesn't make sense. But then if life is itself senseless, why bother if religion doesn't make sense within it? You see the internal inconsistency over there? If everything is meaningless, then why complain that religion is meaningless? Well, everything is meaningless ultimately. So, in materialistic worldview, without any God, all that we get is, we are like searching for islets of meaning in an ocean of meaninglessness. Everything is ultimately meaningless, but within that meaninglessness, oh, the way particles move, that has F is equal to gm1 m2 upon r square. Within an ocean of meaninglessness, okay, words written in this sequence, they mean this. Well, why try to make sense of anything? We all try to make sense of things. That is an innate human urge. And that is that human urge which has led to the development of science, which has led to the development of language, which has led to the development of civilization, which has led to the development of culture. So why is it that that search for meaning which has led to meaningful developments in various fields, why should that search for meaning be abandoned at the point of death? So be consistent. You know, Albert Einstein said that art, religion, and science, they are all fruits of the same tree of human intelligence. So if we use our intelligence, death seems to make everything meaningless. But we all keep searching for meaning. As I said, science progresses by looking for deeper meaning when meaning is not visible at the level at the surface. So like that, if we see, we face death, then we look for deeper meaning beyond the surface. And then we look for what makes most sense. So the understanding that we are spiritual beings, that makes sense not only after about, not on, makes sense not only of death, but it also helps us make sense of life. Otherwise, if we are not spiritual beings, then who is searching for meaning? What is the meaning of meaning? This may be a little abstract and philosophical, but the point I'm making simply is that everything becomes, we just live and drown in an ocean of meaninglessness without a spiritual dimension to our life. And if we want empirical proofs for spiritual things, that is not very easily available, because the spiritual is by definition beyond empirical perception. So it's like if I go for fishing, say, if a person goes for fishing and that person takes a net which has holes which are, say, 10 mm across. And when we go through that, when we take those fishing net and go for fishing, then even if I fish for 100 years, I won't catch fish which are smaller than 10 mm in size. Why? Because the net itself, I have taken of a particular size. And things smaller than that will slip away. Similarly, when we use material science and scientific methods, science begins with the assumption that we are looking for material explanations for material phenomena. So when we look for material explanations for material phenomena, anything that is non-material will slip out of the nets of science. So if we consider science to be like throwing a net to catch the fish of insight, to catch the fish of knowledge, then that which is non-material will slip out of the net of science, because science is looking for material things. This is the operational principle on which most science works. But even beyond that, so we cannot get direct empirical proof for the soul, because the soul by definition is spiritual. But still, there are many cases of people with past life memories. There are many cases of people with near-death experiences. I am right now working on a book on reincarnation. So there are several cases. Maybe I can just mention one or two over here. There is a case of... So the proofs for past life, the evidences for past life memories are quite a bit. So they come at four levels. One is people remember previous lives. And there is no way, say, a child of 5-6 years old remembers that, you know, I was so-and-so at so-and-so place. And there's no way the child could have known that. But still, memories, somebody may say, they can come from anywhere. But along with memories, there are also corresponding recognitions. Not only remember, the child is taken there. So there's the story. There was in BBC, there was a program called 40 Minutes. They showed this boy, Titu Singh, a small boy, and he say that, I'm Rajiv Verma. And I own an electric shop in Kanpur. So he was in Lucknow. And a small boy, 5 years old, he says, I have a wife named Uma. 5 year old boy saying like this. Parents were bewildered. And then the parents, they inquired, and they had a relative in Kanpur. And they found that actually there was a Verma electrical studio there, electrical shop. And it was run by a widow named Uma. So when they went there, they took this child over there. So first I said is that there are recollections. And then when they took him there, he not only recognized, he had never gone to the city before, but when he went there, he just took all his relatives there. His relatives from this life, okay, get into this tonga, tell the tonga to go here. Took him to the shop, and when he took him to the shop, his small boy, you know, he was addressing this elderly woman as if she were his wife. Hey, Uma, why have you changed this like this? She was a woman, and in the things high up, she couldn't reach out. So she rearranged the shop. Said, why have you changed like this? She was shocked. Who are you? What are you saying? And then when they went home, then he saw his mother. And he went and ran and hugged her legs. So, my grandson, I'm not your grandson, I'm your son. So he recognized a number of people over there. And this was documented. Not just these two people. They had several other neutral observers who saw this. And there are many cases. So even in reincarnation and past life memories, researchers have come up with criteria. So one of the criteria to have the research objective is whether there are neutral observers. If there are people who are just relatives, they may be emotionally biased. So if you have neutral observers who observe those recognitions, then they can guarantee, they can vindicate that. And third is, there are past life phobias and behaviors. So for example, if somebody has died because of drowning, then next life people get hydrophobia. So there are phobias, and not just phobias, behaviors. There was one case where a young boy was born in Bengal, in India, and his whole neighborhood was Bengali. And right, the first words he spoke were in Marathi. Now, neither he nor any of his relatives knew Marathi, and most of the relatives were thinking he's just babbling. But then one neighbor just came to meet them. Hey, speak Marathi, sensible Marathi. How does he know it? And that is recorded. There's documentation. But there are cases of a baby a young man, and now speaking in a tone, not a speaking, there is xenoglossy and there is xenography. Speaking foreign tones and writing in spoken foreign tone. So there's one young man who wrote in a language that has been extinct for the last 2000 years. And there are only 6 people in the world who know that language. There's a language that existed in Arabia in the 3rd and 4th century. So he wrote in that script. How did he know that? So there is knowledge available. No, learned behaviors are there. So first is memory, second is recollections, third is either phobias or learned behaviors, which have no sources in this life. And the fourth is birthmarks and birth defects. Usually birthmarks and birth defects, the only known causes for them are either genetic or prenatal during pregnancy. So children may get birthmarks because it comes from the genes from the parents or because the mother has eaten something or done something during pregnancy. Now in many cases, when neither of these factors are present and still the children have birthmarks and birth defects. So for example, this T2, seeing what they found with T2 was that this T2 was a man named Suresh Verma, and he had been shot. He had come home in his car. He was sitting in his car and point blank he was shot. So in a shot, the bullet had entered from his right temple and come out from the left temple. And by the end of this program in BBC, they showed 40 minutes program. They showed that actually this T2, his hair was shaved, and right on one side there was a birthmark, and exactly on the other side there was a birthmark. And because Suresh Verma's case had been a murder case, it had been a crime case, so his body had been postmortem had been done and the report was done. So what Dr. Ian Stevenson, who is a primary researcher in past life memories, what he did was he divided the human body into XY coordinates with 132 locations in the body, and then he correlated how precisely does the birth defect in this life match with the fatal wound in the previous life. And he found that in the case of T2, the exact location of the birth of the fatal wound, the entry and the exit point of the bullets, T2 had 2 birthmarks. On the right side, the birthmark was smaller. You know, when a bullet enters into a body, it has a smaller wound. By the time it comes out, its trajectory widens. It has a bigger wound. So on the left side, there was a bigger birthmark. On the right side, there was a smaller birthmark. And again, when they did the research, they found that the mother had not taken any substance which could have caused the birthmark. There was no genetic history of what could have caused the birthmark. Now this is, we may say, oh, this might just happen by chance. But there is a case of Naysep Budan in Turkey. He's a Muslim. He did not even believe in reincarnation. So he was murdered with knife wounds. And he had 8 wounds all over his body. And then this young boy who was born, he said that, oh, I was that Naysep. And he remembered many details of that bicep, and he was born with 8 birth defects at exactly the same locations where this bicep had the fatal wounds in his previous life. So now if we go into 8, the probability of 8 correlating locations coming about is astronomically low. So there are empirical pointers to reincarnation. And so first, from the point of view of how the understanding of reincarnation helps us make sense of life. Secondly, by understanding that because the soul is spiritual, we cannot directly perceive it. But thirdly, there are empirical pointers from which we can make valid inferences towards the existence of the soul. And ultimately, when we practice spiritual life ourselves, when we practice meditation, you know, we gain a sense of higher spiritual experience. And that higher spiritual experience, that means even when materially we are in agitated, stressed, depressed situations, if we experience spiritual meditation, we'll feel ourselves being lifted above. And that experience of a higher shelter, a higher strength, that is the ultimate confirmatory test for a seeker. The material science is experimental, whereas spiritual science is experiential. Now, we have to do the experiment on ourselves. Our own consciousness is a laboratory on which, if we do the experiment of meditation, especially mantra meditation, if we do, we can experience a higher reality. We can experience a shelter and satisfaction that comes in spite of materially agitating or unsatisfactory circumstances. And that becomes an experiential verification of a higher non-material dimension of our life. Does that address the question? Thank you very much for your kind attention and intelligent participation in the question answers. Thank you. Hare Krishna.